Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council, Incorporated. Her websites, JugglingDynamite.com and VenablePark.com. Welcome back to the show, Danielle.
Thanks, Jim.
Danielle, inflation, both the Canadian and U.S. governments say it's down about 0.5% from what it was, but a different story from the U.K. where they say inflation's running at 13% and could hit 17%. Which government is telling the truth, the U.K. or Canada-U.S.?
Well, it's just different inputs, right?
Yeah.
They're both telling the truth in the sense of that reading. But the thing is that the fuel costs in the UK are quite a bit different. They have different sources of power. So the European crunch that's going on in terms of energy sources and the escalation that happened with the Ukraine invasion, as well as the UK, those things are really accelerating their inflation. But generally speaking, inflation seems to have peaked in terms of, you know, the momentum, and is coming back down now. I mean, if you look at things like the price of WTIC, West Texas Intermediary crude is off significantly from where it peaked, you know, a few months ago, about 28%, and it is now back to where it was before the Ukraine invasion. So we've got a bunch of the, you know, the main drivers of the inflationary push we've seen in the past year in particular, or the past 2 years, was fuel and food. And then rising home prices, which of course trickled into higher rents as well. So those three things together, talk about the misery index, that's really a sign of consumer stress, and that's literally tracked, right? There's an index of the change in the price of food, fuel, and mortgage rates, and that indicates a sense of where the household is in terms of their comfort, confidence, ability to spend, that sort of thing. And indeed, we're seeing that the recent readings have been the highest that we've seen in many years, and higher than at the outset of the last two recessions. So it has certainly been a great stress in the past year, but what we're noticing now is that, as I say, the price of grains has rolled over, price of copper, price of oil. These are, you know, the actual hard inputs, you know, commodities, that sort of thing, make up 40% of the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. That is, and then the housing component is another major input into that basket of that barometer of inflation in the economy. So as those things come off, and indeed that's happening, as you know, we've seen a great softening in the momentum in the housing market as well since February. So all those things combined mean that inflation is coming back down. Now, the difficulty is that even if we had, you know, very benign or no further increases from here, you know, through the end of the year, inflation would still be, you know, above 5% and significantly higher than central banks are targeting. And so I think that the problem is that it spiked relatively quickly because of the compounding impacts of the pandemic and the demand that was fueled by all the government checks, and then you get the Ukraine invasion right after that, and you get this big spike in inflation. But it comes off actually pretty slow because you're looking at year-over-year comparison numbers. And so as the data comes out, it still will remain elevated for the next several months. And so if the central banks are looking at that as indicia of whether or not they can stop with their rate hiking plans, right, and that's what they keep pointing to. They keep pointing to the rate of inflation. The problem is that they're going to continue to hike into 2023, or at least towards the end of the year at this point. And the problem is there that, you know, those hikes that they're, as I mentioned many times, it's so important to understand that the central bank hiking or cutting, they work with a multi-quarter lag through the economy. So just because they, you know, have, so that means that the increases, the really rapid increases that have happened already, you know, year to date in terms of the overnight lending rates, policy rates, with central banks, and they've been the most extreme rate of change we've seen in more than a couple of decades. That has not yet actually all been felt in the economy yet. So again, in terms of things like that drive the economy are the housing and auto consumption, primarily the two biggest parts, especially in the way that we've configured this consumption-based economy in the last few decades. So those two things drive the overall economic cycle, and they have both turned down significantly, and not just in Canada, right? In America, in China, in the UK, all for the same reasons, because every time you get this spike in the cost of living, driven by things that are essential, like fuel and food, and then you get a spike in home prices, and then you get a spike in interest rates, right? So mortgage rates, as people come up for renewal here, it doesn't all hit at once, but as mortgages come up for renewal, they're having to pay higher and higher rates, and that is really taking a huge bite out of their ability to consume. And so, you know, you're starting to see it in auto retail sales have contracted for the past 5 months. U.S. purchasers of homes have declined year over year, down 18%. Six of the past 7 weeks, the purchase numbers have declined on housing. More U.S. mortgage applications for the latest week are down like 62% year over year to a 22-year low. Every time we have this conversation, it feels like the numbers that I'm throwing out are all like, you know, 20-year records and all this. And this is what I'm talking about. We're in this extraordinary period where the data, the year over year rate of change is unlike anything we've seen in a long time. And it's profoundly negative when you look at the momentum in the economy. It's all positive when you look at restoring some semblance of affordability and rational metrics to everything, but it's going to be a painful process, right, for the people who come into this unprepared. And, you know, the problem is home prices are now trending down nationally. Year over year, they're just negative. But since, as I say, since the peak in September, in many of the areas like where you live and I live, in Vancouver and Toronto areas, the greater Toronto area, they've come off, you know, some as much as 20% just since February. So that's, you know, that impacts things like refinancing, which has become this way in which people have, you know, been able to continue to spend even with flat or no wage gains in the past few years. They were refining and taking out money to spend out of their house, and that drove a lot of consumption in the economy. Well, refis are now, you know, on a negative 82% year-over-year trend. So that means that the housing ATM has come to an abrupt close for many people, and now they have to really look how to cut spending, you know, the good old-fashioned way instead of finding free money under their house.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, so many people predicting a recession is around the corner. Is there a way to prepare yourself for it so it's not an absolute shock?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not really a whether, you know, the thing is, most people don't predict recessions, right? They're not confirmed until many months later in retrospect by the official numbers, because there's a lot of coincident indicators and things that get adjusted as time goes on. But when you look at things like the leading indicators that have been reliably, you know, predictive of the economic cycle for decades, things like the ECRI leading indicator index, you know, all the everything there is contracting. Only coincident indicators, which are being held up basically by payroll data, which is a coincident reflection, not something that gives us a leading idea. So again, the downturn in housing, that's that that tends to lead the overall economy. Initial jobless claims, that's a leading indicator. Industrial production is actually a coincident indicator. So you can't, you know, unemployment rate is actually a lagging indicator. So the unemployment rate will look low for a long time, and it takes some time for that to start to tick up for people to make new claims for unemployment checks. So all that really is kind of noise that gets people confused, because they say, well, gee, how can we be going into a recession when, you know, the jobless claims are still, the non-farm payrolls numbers are still pretty good, or, you know, the some of the coincident data still looks pretty strong. But we have to look at the things that give us a heads up. Things like credit card use in the household sector, which we have seen explode. Things like the 10-2-year spread, the inversion in the interest rate spread, which has been, it's now the most negative it's been in 40 years. Those sort of things give you a sense of, as I say, all the leading indicator indexes of everything that gives us an advance clue are now contracting. And that's globally. That's not just in Canada. That's in, China, which has been a very important consumer of global commodities and demand, is in a major downturn, the worst that has happened in that country in many decades. And that is, you know, a bunch of things going on there, but a lot of it, you know, for example, you know, there was a lot of people were saying that we had a shortage of chips, of semiconductors, and that was indicative of this runaway demand. So they were saying, you know, there's no sign of a downturn in demand of consumer goods, electronics or cars, because you can't get enough chips, and that's the whole problem with sales, why sales have been coming off. Well, actually, this week, you know, China semiconductor manufacturers and the Taiwan semiconductor manufacturers, as well as the big U.S. ones, are all saying, wow, we've seen such a collapse in demand, and we've got a massive inventory overhang now. You know, that's the same thing as major retailers are saying, whether it's Walmart or whether it's, you know, Lowe's and all these companies that have been really riding the wave of consumer spending, ATM withdrawals from the house and free money from the government, all that, they're sort of saying that we've seen a massive downshift here. So all that really just gives you a heads up that we're going into a much more challenging period. And what happens during those, you know, as I say, the positive part of it is it tends to wipe out the zombie players, the weak links, the bad companies that have been just, you know, able to continue because they were accessing more and more debt and actually are counterproductive. Things like speculation, the meme crowd, households, gambling, you know, all that sort of thing that went on through the pandemic is still happening. So that's another indicator of how I know that we're not yet through the bottom of this cycle, because you still have this really kind of rampant animal spirits flavor going on, where in the rally that we've seen just in the last month, you know, the TSX, the Canadian Stock Exchange, has rallied to over 8% just since July the 14th. And you see a lot of, you know, the Bed Bath and Beyonds and the really sketchy names that are questionable business models, again, leaping because people are gambling with them again. So all that really suggests to you that we've still got a lot of animal spirits. We've still got a lot of debt in the system. We have a lot of people that, you know, defaults are rising for sure. You have the automakers saying they've got massive inventory builds. The used car market is, you know, there's a lot of people trying to hide the fact that there's a lot of inventory now coming back through repos and all that, because they're wanting to keep the narrative alive of the shortage narrative. But one by one every day, the reality is hitting that there's a lot more inventory and supply than there is demand, and demand is not turned back up yet, still on the way down. So all that suggests that this downturn, including the fact that central banks are still in a hiking mode, never mind a pause or a cutting mode, suggests to you that the downturn is likely to continue for at least the next 6 to 12 months, in which case the stock market, which has been in this, you know, soft landing sort of dream state, hoping that all these negative, you know, black clouds can come and somehow we're not going to have a recession. Somehow we're going to see continued positive growth through this, and that earnings, which have been record for all the supports from all the areas that I've just mentioned, that corporate earnings are not going to have to give back or come off their, you know, a really elevated trend that they've experienced in the past couple of years. All that's kind of fairy tale stuff because the math is what it is. And so we have to really accept that reality and just say there's a good side to this, and that, for example, you know, Desjardins Bank and RBC and these major sort of, they're not the typically the most leading voices on this subject, but they're all indicating that they could see Canadian housing come off 20 to 25%. Again, that's sort of, you know, what do you call it, code talk for the recession is coming. The economy is going to experience a major downdraft from just that aspect alone, never mind all these other imbalances that have built up. And so during recessions, the downside is people lose their jobs, earnings get condensed significantly. You see a big downturn in asset prices. So those are the things. That's why everyone hates recessions. That's why politicians and central banks never want to see them coming, because it means people are going to lose money, basically. But it doesn't mean you have to lose money. You know, you can actually be proactive in the way that you manage your own income statement and expenditures and what you decide to put your savings in going into these downturns. And if you aren't risk exposed, if you do have a good buffer of cash, if you don't have very much debt and you have whatever payments you have fixed and well within your income ability, if you have an emergency fund, you know, if you have cash on the sideline realizing that things are going to come on liquidation sale sometime in the next year or so, and that there could be extraordinarily exciting opportunities for investment there, but you have to do all that back work beforehand, right? If you're just blindly kind of going over the cliff of Niagara Falls with the crowd and you aren't looking for this downturn or preparing for it in advance, that's when you can really get financially devastated. So it's, as I say, it's a natural recurring part of the cycle. This one's been extraordinarily, extended and drawn out, and there's been a lot of back and forth trying to, you know, change the direction of this macro factors, which are ultimately going to be driven down over time by the aging population and by the debt weight. Those are the main drivers. And in the meantime, we've got these housing bubbles and consumption bubbles that are bursting, asset bubbles, stock market bubble, like it's basically all very negative momentum to the downside on price. So just understanding why it's happening, that it must happen, that it's a natural clearing force, and just keeping your wits about you in terms of managing your own behavior, that's really the secret to success.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. If you have any questions for Danielle or any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.